Welcome to Ujjayini.com, your daily current affairs companion for UPSC and state PCs preparation. Imagine a world where the very floor of the ocean, far below the reach of sunlight, holds the keys to the batteries that power electric cars and the magnets that spin our wind turbines. That is the promise and the challenge that gathered leaders and experts in Chennai on January 18th, when the Responsible Business for Inclusive Oceans Symposium opened, co-organized by the International Seabed Authority and India's Ministry of Earth Sciences. First, let us picture the ocean as a resource frontier. The seas cover 71% of our planet and are now a treasure trove of critical minerals. Potato-sized polymetallic nodules lie on the deep ocean floor, packed with manganese, nickel, copper and cobalt, the very metals that make up the batteries in electric vehicles and the circuitry of our gadgets. Around hydrothermal vents, seafloor massive sulfides deposit copper, zinc, gold and silver, while cobalt-rich ferromanganese crusts cling to the flanks of seamounts, providing cobalt essential for battery cathodes. Even the rare earth elements hidden in deep-sea muds of the Pacific are indispensable for the permanent magnets that drive wind turbines and electric motors. The surge in demand for these minerals, driven by the global energy transition, has turned the deep ocean into an economically attractive frontier. Deep-sea mining, that is the extraction of these resources from depths ranging from 200 to 6,000 meters, is now moving from theory to practice. Now, let us turn to the International Seabed Authority, the body that governs these activities. Legally, the ISA was created under Part 11 and Annex 6 of the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS, which was adopted in 1982 and entered into force in 1994. UNCLOS carves the ocean into distinct zones. The area, that is the seabed, ocean floor and subsoil beyond national jurisdiction is declared the common heritage of mankind under Article 136. No state or individual may claim sovereignty over it. Its resources must be exploited for the benefit of all humanity, with special attention to the needs of developing countries. The ESA's role and structure are therefore central. It regulates all mineral-related activities in the area through exploration contracts that allow states and private companies to explore, though not yet to exploit, mineral deposits. The regulatory framework for extraction is the Mining Code, which is still being finalized. In addition, the ISA has set up an enterprise, a commercial arm intended to conduct mining on behalf of developing nations, although this entity has not yet become operational. The authority is headquartered in Kingston, Jamaica and counts 168 member states plus the European Union. India's relationship with the ISA is historic. India was one of the first countries to receive an ISA exploration license in 1987. Earning the distinction of a pioneer investor. A pivotal moment came in 2021 when the tiny Pacific island of Nauru triggered the UNCLOS 2-year rule on behalf of the metals company. By notifying the ISA that it would submit a plan of work for exploitation within 2 years, Nauru forced the authority to complete the mining code by July 2023, regardless of whether it was ready. That deadline was missed, leaving the legal status of exploitation requests in a grey zone, a controversy that dominated discussions at the RBIO's symposium. Turning now to India's deep-sea interests, the country holds 2 key exploration licenses through the Ministry of Earth Sciences. The first, granted in 1987 for the Central Indian Ocean Basin, covers roughly 150,000 square kilometers of polymetallic nodules rich in manganese, nickel, cobalt and copper. The operator is the National Institute of Ocean Technology, or NIOT, together with the ministry. The second license concerns the Indian Ocean's polymetallic sulfides, focusing on the Carlsberg Ridge and Rodrigues Triple Junction, where hydrothermal vents host copper, zinc, silver and gold. These licenses are part of the broader Deep Ocean Mission, launched in 2021 with a budget of 4,077 crore rupees. The mission aims to develop the crewed submersible Matsya 6000, capable of diving to 6,000 meters, to advance technologies for deep-sea mining and exploration, to document marine biodiversity at depth, and to carry out seabed mapping and resource assessment. Nayatan Chennai leads the development of Matsya 6000. Now, let us examine the key issues that were on the agenda at RBIO's 2026. First, the environmental governance gap. Deep-sea ecosystems are among the least understood on Earth. Hydrothermal vents support chemosynthesis-based food chains that do not rely on sunlight, harboring unique species found nowhere else. Polymetallic nodule fields are home to slow-growing fauna, and disturbing them can generate sediment plumes that travel hundreds of kilometers, smothering habitats. Yet the ESA's environmental regulations are being drafted in parallel with rising exploitation pressure, and the precautionary principle has not been formally incorporated into the mining code. That is a serious concern. Second, the question of benefit sharing for developing countries. UNCLOS obliges that the exploitation of the area's resources must benefit all humanity, especially the developing world. The ESA's enterprise was designed to ensure that, but it remains non-operational. Moreover, sponsoring states such as Nauru and Tonga are being used by multinational companies to obtain ISA licenses without genuine benefits flowing to those island nations. At the symposium, India advocated for operationalizing the enterprise, mandating technology transfer to developing country operators, and establishing transparent royalty and revenue-sharing structures. Third, the moratorium debate. A coalition of Pacific Island states, environmental NGOs led by the Deep Sea Conservation Coalition, and several European governments have called for a moratorium on deep-sea mining until robust environmental baselines are established and regulations are solidified. The International Union for Conservation of Nature passed a moratorium resolution in 2021. Proponents of mining argue that land-based extraction of the same minerals, for example cobalt from the Democratic Republic of Congo or nickel from Indonesia, causes far greater environmental and social damage. The debate continues to be a flashpoint at international forums. Now, let us connect all this to India's Blue Economy vision. The term Blue Economy refers to the sustainable use of ocean resources for economic growth, improved livelihoods and the health of marine ecosystems. India aims for the Blue Economy to contribute $1 trillion to GDP by 2030, roughly 10 times its current contribution. Achieving this target will require balancing resource extraction with environmental stewardship and inclusive governance. Now, let us lock in the key facts and numbers for your revision. Remember this number: the International Seabed Authority was established under UNCLOS 1982, entered into force in 1994, and is headquartered in Kingston, Jamaica. The ISA has 168 member states plus the European Union. The area, beyond national jurisdiction, is declared the common heritage of mankind under Article 136. India's first exploration license for polymetallic nodules in the central Indian Ocean basin dates back to 1987 and covers about 150,000 square kilometers. The Deep Ocean Mission carries a budget of 4,077 crore rupees and its flagship vehicle, Matsya 6000, can dive to 6,000 meters. The two-year rule was triggered by Nauru in 2021, obliging the ISA to finish the mining code by July 2023, a deadline that was missed. The IUCN moratorium on deep-sea mining was passed in 2021 at the World Conservation Congress in Marseille. India's Blue Economy target is $1 trillion contribution to GDP by 2030. Now, how does this connect to your UPSC preparation? For prelims, you should memorize that the ISA was created under UNCLOS Part 11, that the area is the common heritage of mankind, that India's pioneer exploration license dates to 1987 for the Central Indian Ocean Basin, and that the deep ocean mission's budget is 4,077 crore rupees with the Matsya 6,000 submersible. For Maine's General Studies paper 2, the topics of international ocean governance, UNCLOS, the role of the ISA and India's multilateral interests are prime fodder for essay and answer writing. For Maine's GS3, focus on the blue economy, deep sea mining, the energy transition's demand for critical minerals, environmental governance challenges, and the need for equitable benefit sharing. These are all likely to appear in questions on sustainable development, climate change mitigation, and strategic resource security. In closing, the debates unfolding at the Responsible Business for Inclusive Oceans Symposium illustrate a pivotal moment where technology, law, environmental stewardship, and geopolitics intersect. How India navigates deep-sea mining, ensures inclusive benefit-sharing, and safeguards fragile ecosystems will shape not only the nation's blue economy ambitions but also its standing in global ocean governance. This is the crossroads where the future of sustainable development and strategic resource security meet.